From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last October 2015 as the race for Monroe County Executive was heating up. After, quote, careful consideration, the Democrat and Chronicle's editorial board endorsed Republican Cheryl DeNolfo for the job. Now, the board told readers that the decision was not an easy one, so it rated both DeNolfo and her other opponents on a series of issues, including economic development, the environment, and the anti-poverty initiative. DeNolfo won the endorsement because she edged out Democrat Sandy Frankel and the Green Party candidate Rajesh Barnabas in more categories, including the ethics and integrity issue. The endorsement stated, quote, if she is elected, we will be watching closely to see if she follows through on her campaign promises, since many of them lack specifics, and whether she truly understands and values governmental transparency as much as we do, end quote. Very curious to see how they feel a year later. Now, while endorsing candidates has been a long-held tradition for many newspapers, this year's presidential election has reignited the debate about the role of editorial boards and endorsements. A new Huffington Post YouGov survey indicates 51% of Americans polled say that newspapers should not endorse political candidates anymore, and just 24% believe, yes, definitely they should. The rest are sort of mixed or say they don't know. Dozens of publications, including some Republican-leaning papers, have endorsed Hillary Clinton. Far fewer publications have endorsed Donald Trump. For only the third time since the Atlantic Monthly's founding, the editors have endorsed a presidential candidate, selecting Hillary Clinton, saying Trump, quote, might be the most ostentatiously unqualified major party candidate in the 227-year history of the American presidency, end quote. USA Today, which over its 34-year history has never endorsed a presidential candidate, published an anti-endorsement of Trump. But how much influence do endorsements or anti-endorsements have in shaping voters' opinions? President, yeah, but local races as well. This hour, we examine the ethics of endorsements, the role of newspapers in American politics, and how to make sure that wall between editorial and news continues and is separated. I'd like to welcome my guest. Julie Phillip is the senior engagement editor for the Democrat and Chronicle. Welcome back, Julie.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Sean Carroll is the executive producer for 13 Wham News and 13 Wham TV. Sean, welcome to you.
Privileged to be here with you and Julie.
And on the line with us is Howard Owens, the publisher of the Batavian and the Wyoming County Free Press. Howard, welcome. Welcome to you as well.
Hey, Evan. Great to be with you again.
Hi, Howard.
Julie, all right. So I started with a year ago. It just felt timely because there's a lot been going on, not only the front page of the Democrat and Chronicle, but 13 Wham News and anywhere else you look about what's going on locally when it comes to fee waivers. We've had the I-Square issue. So I'm just going to start right off the bat and get this out of the way. Do you look back on that endorsement with any regret a year ago?
It's funny because our board just discussed that very question yesterday and unanimously decided that no, there was no regret. That if you look at her record, and we have written editorials about this, she has accomplished many of the things that she said she was going to accomplish, and she did them fairly quickly as she started out. On the other hand, there are very, very questionable practices and ethical lapses that we have also weighed in on as a board. And as you read the last line of the editorial, we don't have crystal balls when the newspaper publishes an editorial. We do our best, and then we keep an eye.
Okay, fair enough. Now, let's just start with that baseline question then. I know if you were a participant in that YouGov poll, you'd say, yes, newspapers should be endorsing. There's a long history and a long tradition in this country of that happening. It goes back a long way. Most newspapers still do that. Democrat and Chronicle does that. What's the baseline explanation for why you think there should be endorsements?
Well, I do have to step back a moment and let you know that we are making no endorsements this year other than the presidential election.
Okay.
And there are a variety of reasons for that. Times are changing. That's one of them. And if you look at the races that we have before us, there are very few competitive races. So when we're looking at a diminished staff and prioritizing, you know, the digital news that we're trying to produce, an editorial, we have to really decide, is it worth our time to, because you don't just sit around and say, hey, who are we going to endorse today? We bring the candidates in. It's a long, exhaustive interview process, as the candidates will tell you. And not only do we bring the candidates in, we need to have a majority of our board members clear their schedules. So the more candidates you're bringing in, the more it disrupts everybody on the board and their schedules. So it is a huge undertaking to do a broad range of endorsements. And at this time in the industry, it just doesn't make sense when you have so few competitive races.
But, you know, a Sini slaughter for Congress is an example. There are other congressional races that are tie in locally. You have assembly races that are, you know, ostensibly competitive. Those are, to you, not worth an endorsement?
Well, the Assini Slaughter one is different for the Democrat and Chronicle. I am, I was not here 4 years ago, but it's my understanding that they did not endorse that, and the reason we will not endorse in that race this time is because Mark Assini has been very active in Unite Rochester, which is one of the editorial board's initiatives, and we just did not feel that we were qualified.
Too much conflict.
Exactly.
Okay.
In that race. And so that is a race that we have purposely avoided, although you're right, it is a very, very competitive race.
Okay. Now, in the subject of television news, you don't often see endorsements, but I was saying before the hour began, for example, it can happen. I worked in West Virginia where the owner of a number of stations in West Virginia, he kind of created a statewide news network. And just about every afternoon when I was there, he was doing 90-second commentaries on whatever he liked. And from endorsing candidates to issues of the day, and just felt, I own it, I've got the right to do it, and I'm not the reporters, I'm the owner, and that there's a difference there. So it can happen in television, doesn't happen as often. And Sean Carroll, as executive producer for 13 WHAM News, are you uncomfortable with the notion of endorsements?
Yeah, from all media. Very uncomfortable with it. You don't see it much in TV, although you gave a good example. And there are certain corporate ownerships of groups of television stations that will offer various commentaries and such. But I know from my experience in 13, as well as in other media markets and with other TV stations, we don't issue, as a matter of fact, any political endorsement specifically backing one candidate or another in a race. And editorials are few and far between, if not completely non-existent. I think there are times when various outlets, via social media or a blog page on a station website or something, allow for some expounding or some analysis, and maybe even some may perceive that to be an editorial or, but a lot of times it's maybe objectively saying this was right and this was wrong. I've seen that over the years, but not even as much now. I think it's about trying to be as objective as possible. Personally, my approach as a journalist, I disagree with the idea and concept that, especially in this day and age, media outlets of any kind should be endorsing politicians.
All right. Howard, how do you feel about it?
Well, to me, it's a complex issue, and I think it depends on each outlet's mission and staffing and availability. The common argument among the digital class these days is, everybody has an opinion now. There's so much more opinion out there. There's so much more information available. Readers can make up their own mind. Viewers can make up their own mind. But, you know, for a newspaper, say, like the DNC, sort of the newspaper record for its community, and it has an editorial board, I think that the ability to speak with some gravitas benefits the brand, and so from a business perspective, barring resource depletion, as we discussed earlier, it makes a lot of sense. For us, you know, being a small news outlet, you know, where I'm doing a lot of the news gathering, and if there was an editorial board, I would be it. It just doesn't make any sense at all for us to do it.
Okay. Well, I suspect, though, Howard, there are small presses like yours around the country where there are still even singular endorsements, as you would sort of put it. I wouldn't think you'd be an outlier.
I think it's dangerous ground when you're a small publisher with a small staff. Even if I had a couple of people, the editorial board concept gives that's removed from the reporter gives some barrier between what the reporter's doing and what the newspaper as an institution is doing. As those barriers break down, it makes a lot less sense.
I also invited, by the way, Marianna Teller from City News, and she declined the invitation to come on the program, but did say this in an email, quote, "The endorse or not question is interesting. Many people think newspapers shouldn't endorse, but to me, the election of candidates is one of the most important things that happens in a democracy. If newspapers publish their opinions about war, criminal justice, healthcare, taxes, and all of that, what sense does it make to not express our opinion about the people who will make decisions on those issues?" How do you feel about that, Julie?
I 100% agree with that. You know, really, an endorsement is nothing more than an editorial. It's done every day on important issues. It's done by people who are familiar with the issues, familiar with the background, can provide context, can bring in newsmakers to get firsthand answers, and form opinions that we're not telling you you should believe. We are getting it out there so that there is fact-based opinion for which to start a dialogue, to help you make up your mind, to encourage you to argue with us. We like it when people have dissenting viewpoints, as long as they are evidence-based and they can provide facts to back up their opinions. It's an endorsement simply is an editorial. And if we avoid that, and she's absolutely right, this is the one time, you know, most of the time government operates just fine without any kind of popular input. But every 4 years, there's popular input into that government. And it's saying, we like what you're doing, we don't like what you're doing. And I think it would be a huge travesty if no one did endorsements anymore.
All right, so let me hit this from a couple of ways and let our listeners know. If you want to join the conversation, I'd love to hear from you. You know, how do you feel about endorsements? Do you think they, what I'm going to talk about next is what I'd like to hear from listeners on. Do you feel that it is harder to discern the difference between, you know, an editorial division and the news division? In other words, if a newspaper endorses, does that make you trust their news coverage less? That's one thing that the YouGov poll found, is that if there are endorsements, then readers of that or consumers of that news then make assumptions about how the news coverage reads. And I know that is not the intention, and we're going to talk about that. But listeners, how do you feel about endorsements in general? Do they affect you at all? Should we continue to see them? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Julie, I'm going to start with you and go around the panel. On that issue, that's what YouGov found, is that a lot of people feel like if you endorse, then your news coverage is biased. Unfair?
I wouldn't say it's unfair. I think that's how people feel. I wish Tom Porietti were here, because this is a media literacy issue. This is a generation or two that have grown up now with the Fox News that is not always news. A real misunderstanding of what the difference is between the editorial pages and the other pages in the newspaper. And I see this day in and day out by very well-meaning and intelligent people that will call me and ask if I'm going to cover a story or have one of the reporters go. They really don't understand that the editorial board does not mean all of the editors that edit, copy, and send reporters out. The editorial board, until very recently, wasn't even in the same room. There was no crossing. They had their own offices in the old building, and very rarely did the two sides mingle. Over time, when that has changed, we do now sit in the newsroom, and we do consult with reporters when we want to have questions answered. But reporters do not consult with us when they want questions answered. So it's a very hard thing for people to understand, and it is not something that is out there every day. There isn't anybody telling them this is what the editorial board is and this is what the editorial board does every time you go on to DNC on the website or the newspaper. So anyone who has never learned may be confused about that fact. So I don't think it's unfair. I just think that it's something that needs to be made more clear to people. And media literacy is essential in this day and age, and it's just not happening.
Okay. Sean Carroll?
It's an absolutely fair criticism. It's my biggest concern with political endorsements. There's a growing dialogue and sentiment in this country and all pockets of all communities. If distrust in government is number one, distrust in media is number two. And when you start issuing political endorsements, you are linking a media outlet's, whether it's an editorial board, an editor, or as you mentioned, a station owner, to a particular political candidate or philosophy or initiative. And Julie began the answer to her first question there as saying it's nothing more than an editorial. It's not. It's a political tool that is used by candidates in campaign flyers, advertisements. So what you are doing is providing a political opponent or they're obviously opponents, a political opponent with a tool to then say, look, Julie Philip and her editorial board love me and don't think this person's qualified or whatever it is. And so I think it is literally providing a political tool that you're interjecting into the conversation. I'll let Julie speak, but I also think that it goes beyond. If you have to take a lot of time discussing and explaining media literacy, then again, maybe it shouldn't be done.
Okay, Julie?
Yeah, I would just like to point out when I was news director here, we often got upset because candidates had our news clippings and our, you know, audio sound bites and parts of news reporters using those as tools as well.
In advertisements.
And it was even worse because those reports were not meant to be opinion. They were taken out of context or they caught someone looking bad or they... So every time you go out there, you are providing a tool for a politician to use in a commercial. The editorial is pretty upfront that this is what it is. Where as when they took something, it would bother me to no end when I was news director at this place when somebody used, and we had very little recourse, but it made it appear that we were editorializing when we were not.
Okay.
Endorsements are used by political organizations, labor unions, other politicians, and exclusively editorial boards and media, some media outlets.
Okay.
That's my concern. I feel like they are only a political tool.
All right. So before I kick it back over to Howard, let me just follow up with Julie on that point. I take the point. I've been in multiple newsrooms where that has come up during a campaign. Somebody's using a report, a newspaper headline, 30 seconds, 12 seconds, 8 seconds of a newscast in an ad, and that gets discussed. That's one thing, and we can delve into that further if you want. But how about Sean's contention that when you actually endorse, you are giving them an arsenal for ads, that you're almost participating in the process that helps ads and a candidate over another?
Well, I think, you know, does that mean that you don't think musicians should endorse? We have athletes endorsing. It seems to me that if anyone's going to endorse, it should be people who are immersed in the issues day in and day out. And we hope that voters are also using it as a tool in order to help themselves understand this very important task that they have. And whether or not they agree with it, we tend to bring up some of the bigger issues. And so they are, you know, have a sort of a grounding on what's at stake. So I hope that we're also providing an invaluable tool for the voter.
Okay. Howard Owens, how do you feel about all that?
So two quick points, I guess. One on headlines. I did work in politics for a short time in California and learned a valuable lesson that's carried over in my journalism career subsequently is I'm careful how I write headlines because I know that if they're too juicy, some political opponent is going to make a mailer out of them. And so I don't particularly want to give that kind of fodder, and it tends to make me write my headlines as neutrally as possible on political stories. And then the other thing is, you know, I'm going to disagree with Sean just a little bit. You know, we don't exist in some sort of safe room where we have to keep everything germ-free from the rest of the political process. We're the fourth estate. We're part of the political process. So if a newspaper wants to take the position that we are going to have an institutional say in this, I think that's part, you know, that's traditionally been part of the community responsibility for a newspaper, especially a newspaper record, as we call it in the industry. So I think that can be an important part of the political process. And if a client wants, or if a politician wants to use an endorsement, pro or con, as part of campaign fodder, that's just another voice in the process to me.
Let me respond to that, and then I'll let Sean as well here. But by saying this, Howard, I'm looking at this YouGov survey, and again, it's scientific, but I'm sure it's not perfect. I don't know exactly how the questions were asked, so I'm doing my best to kind of sum up here. And there's one thing that Julie Philip will like is that only 18% say they don't read a newspaper. That's a good number.
I already knew that number.
Okay. Oh, you did know that number.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So mm-hmm. We still have a lot of Americans, despite all of the stereotypes, that do at least read a newspaper in some form. But the trust isn't very high. 13% of Americans say they trust their newspaper, their local newspaper, a lot. 43% trust it somewhat. So 56% offering some kind of a trust, but most of that somewhat trust. Then 25% say don't trust it very much or not at all, and then 18% don't read at all. So to Sean's point on trust, right now, American journalism isn't viewed very highly. I think sometimes I've been a little defensive when people say journalism is dead. I say, look at David Farenthold and the Washington Post. He's probably going to win a Pulitzer for his work on in this campaign, and there's many other good examples. I mean, look at Gary Craig. Look at some of the work that in your shop, Sean. I mean, I don't believe that journalism is dead. Howard, I feel the same about you. I don't believe journalism's dead at all, but I understand some of the cynicism. And if right now the status quo is Americans don't trust journalism very much, and they suspect that endorsements contribute to coloring coverage. One of two things has to happen. You either have to stop endorsing, or you have to do a much better job at media literacy above and beyond where we are right now, because that trust isn't really happening. So unless, Howard, you disagree with that premise, what do you think?
Well, I want to jump in on the trust issue, because an important point needs to be made, and I'm going to share some thoughts. I can't cite where I got them, but these aren't original with me. But basically, since the 70s, since the Watergate issue, trust in all institutions has been going down.
Yeah.
And that is concurrent with the change in journalism during that time. You know, pre-Watergate, pre-Woodward and Bernstein, pretty much the Washington Press Corps was cut and paste of whatever they were being fed by the institutions in Washington. And that changed with Watergate, and reporting became much more skeptical, and we started talking a lot more about some of the problems and the faults that have always existed in the government. So ironically, when the press should have been trusted the least, it was trusted much more than it is today. You know, reporting is much more honest today, and that has helped feed a greater cynicism in America to our own detriment and in a multi-layered way of looking at that. So that's a big issue, I think, on trust.
Julie Phillip?
I agree with what he just said. I mean, he just said that very beautifully, and I don't know if he cited it or not. But I 100% agree, and I am a skeptic when I read newspapers. And I think that in this generation, you do have to be a little cynical and skeptical when you are reading news, because it's very difficult, particularly online, to distinguish what is news. And when you're looking at little bits and pieces, a lot of times, even though it might be accurate, it's taken out of context. So there's good reason for skepticism. But there are great journalists, and you named a few, and we have one right here in the room with us.
Yeah, I definitely push back against that. It's just that if that trust doesn't exist, I feel like something has to change. And Julie is on the side of more media literacy. As you cited our friend Tom Proietti, of course, he's been working on that for years. He thinks it should be taught in schools more often at a younger age, and I think there's probably something to
say
for that.
And not just for news. I mean, there's many reasons to understand that you have to be skeptical when you're looking at media.
Advertising manipulation, all kinds of different things. So, okay, I take that point. Sean?
Just on the trust thing, and it's interesting that Julie says this year, only making an endorsement for President in this race, which is an interesting shift, because it feels like this seasonal, in a lot of newspapers, DNC is just one of many, that season of endorsements, and you hand them out for various races run. Chicago Sun-Times and a number of outlets, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is another, that stopped making these endorsements in 2012. And this was just one quote that really goes to this issue of trust here and sort of media perception in the community. Research on the matter, this is from the Chicago Sun-Times, suggests that editorial endorsements don't change many votes, especially in higher profile races. Another school of thought, however, often expressed by readers, is that candidate endorsements, more so than all other views on an editorial page, promote the perception of a hidden bias by a newspaper from page one to the sports pages. And we are seeing in all facets of society, look what's going on in the NFL, various political societal statements being made that do come across political lines or philosophies. And I think more than ever, endorsements, if they are to be handed out, and I am against them, should be very rare and sparing, and perhaps then more powerful.
All right. Howard, do you want to jump in?
I think that's a good point. I wanted to jump in, Evan, if I could, just because I've been sitting here thinking about this since you brought up all the poll data about Donald Trump and whatnot. This is a very different kind of election cycle, and you're seeing all these people making endorsements that haven't necessarily done it. USA Today, The Atlantic, the third time in history they've made an endorsement. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things, though, about this is you would think that this wave of media coming out against Donald Trump would move the needle, and it really hasn't. You've still got at least 40% of the electorate tightly hanging on to supporting Donald Trump no matter what is thrown out there against him. And to the point of this conversation, in a way, endorsements are working, you know, against the media. If you endorse anybody other than Donald Trump, for the Donald Trump supporters, you are then therefore part of the liberal elite we're so against. So there's this wall of bias among Trump supporters that endorsements actually only feed into that.
Yeah, a good example, as Sean Carroll said, the trust in journalism isn't very strong in this country. Certainly the trust in government is not strong. The last presidential candidate in the Republican Party, the guy who got tens of millions of votes, carried a number of states, didn't win, Mitt Romney, comes out and has a broadside attack on Donald Trump, essentially an anti-Trump endorsement. And I don't know if a single Trump voter changed their mind on that. So to Howard's point, that probably just it bolstered their idea. Well, that endorsement proves that we're doing the right thing because the establishment or XYZ is against it. And it is a very interesting time. I have some pretty interesting listener comments, and I see the phone ringing. But before I get to your phone calls, let me read Alan's email. He says, Evan, I think the news does lean left, and editorials seem to be designed to counter that. I did not believe the Democrat and Chronicle's endorsement of Cheryl Donolfo was genuine, just meant to convince us that they're not always leaning left. All right, Julie Phillip, that's an interesting email.
Whoa. I can say it was very genuine. We had a very difficult time between the two candidates, who we both saw, as we wrote, had strengths, both had weaknesses.
There were three candidates.
Yes, the two major parties were they just talking about.
Sandy Franklin and Cheryl Donolfo.
And we spent a lot of time. We brought both of them in for over an hour each. We spent hours and hours discussing it, and we spent hours and hours writing. And then, you know, we would have lead writer, and then everybody would weigh in, and you'd go back. And so it took a long time, and it was a difficult decision, and there was no motive behind it. It is what we arrived at. And like I said, when we met yesterday, I brought that up. I said, so how do we feel about that? And, you know, if you look at the list of things that she did, we've been writing editorials because she's been knocking things off that list left and right, just, you know, with her ethics commission and her, you know, all of the I can't remember what else was on the list now, but I know
winding
that we
down
have
at LDCs.
Had LDCs she got through. So just as we felt then, we felt, well, she is doing what she said, but she's also doing some things that make us question, which we did at the time. So we look back and know we did not have a crystal ball, and I don't know that we would have changed. That was sort of the consensus. Would we have changed that endorsement if we knew now what we knew then? I don't think so.
All right, well, let me just follow Alan's email with a separate question then, because he's saying that part of your endorsements in general are designed to counter public opinion, or at least let the kind of signal to the public that you aren't on one team or another. Has the editorial board ever said, hey, we've endorsed a lot of Republicans or a lot of Democrats, let's go the other way in this one?
Now, you remember, I just started a year ago, so I don't have a lot of the history, but I did ask for some background a little bit when we were talking about what we would endorse this time. And as far as the presidential candidates, I think they have, all at least in recent time, it has always gone Democrat. But as far as the other races, all the local races, it's been fair. I don't have statistics, and it wasn't a study, but they seem to go both, you know, either Republican or Democrat.
Do you keep track of them? Sorry to interject. Do you keep track of them? Does somebody at the paper keep track of all?
Jim may have prior to me. I have not.
Jim Lawrence, she's talking about her predecessor there. All right, so let's get our only break of the hour. I'll come back with more of your questions and a number of chatter on Twitter as well, at Evan Dawson on Twitter. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Newspapers have a long tradition of endorsing in our country. And how do you feel about that? Do you read those endorsements? Do they impact you? Some on Twitter are saying that they have been moved by some endorsements. I'll get to that. Others a little more cynical about the process, and that's out there too. So let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back with Julie Phillip, the senior engagement editor for the Democrat and Chronicle, Sean Carroll, executive producer for 13 WHAM News, and Howard Owens, publisher of the Batavian and the Wyoming County Free Press. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections. If Hillary Clinton is president, how would she govern? Well, audio leaked recently of conversations she had with donors this past February and how she talked about supporters of Bernie Sanders. She said at the time that they were idealistic and we shouldn't throw a wet blanket on their idealism, but she also indicated they wanted too much, that what they wanted wasn't practical. What can we learn from it? What do Sanders supporters say? That's Monday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Should newspapers endorse? We've seen a lot of talk about endorsements in recent weeks, with a number of newspapers kind of going in different directions traditionally. A newspaper in Arizona, New Hampshire, endorsing in ways that, in those cases, usually Republican endorsements, not choosing Donald Trump. Detroit, was it the Free Press that endorsed Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, in this race? That certainly made some waves. And you've seen USA Today, which has never endorsed for the presidential race that I know of. Correct, Julia Phillip?
I don't know. They never have. And this wasn't actually, in my mind, this wasn't really an endorsement. It was an unendorsement.
That's a de facto endorsement in my book. But I take the point that they're saying not Trump. And here's Danielle on Twitter saying, as an always Bernie believer, I have been struggling. The Atlantic support of Hillary has me rethinking my plan to opt out of the presidential choice. So there's an endorsement that does have her making a consideration. Matt on Twitter says, endorsements are from a bygone era. Print news still thinks its ed boards are relevant in 2016. Joe says, I personally think the idea of journalistic integrity is dead or dying with the source, the era of sources like CNN and Fox News. All right, Joe, come on, man. I take the point that I understand why you're cynical about some of that stuff, but I've been trying to shine a light on some of the really great journalism that is out there, and maybe that's a separate show. If you're cynical about journalism, where's the great journalism that you're missing? Maybe we'll do that someday. But right now we're talking about how the public views endorsements. And so another listener wrote in to say, Betty in the city of Rochester says she does want newspapers to do endorsements, but she thinks the New York Times is biased in favor of Hillary Clinton. So here's a listener who says endorsements are good, but she perceives bias in journalism. Sean Carroll, does that line up with what?
It's my biggest concern. Bluntly, it's protecting the objective voice that I feel is most valuable in our society. I absolutely, when we're adding to the community or on a larger scale national conversation, I know Howard expressed briefly the role of that he sees the Fourth Estate playing. Certainly Julie has as well. I see it slightly differently in that we need to be that trusted voice that will hold anybody accountable, whether no matter who they are. Bluntly, when we talk about media literacy, as Julie brought up, you've got situations where because a newspaper or media outlet has issued an endorsement, people think the paper's for that person and now question, rightly or wrongly, I'm just saying.
The entire paper, the news division.
The news division or whatever it means. They don't always see, and I think Julie just even acknowledged that, they don't always see the difference between
but
that editorial
line. I would also point out that
they're not going to hold that person they endorsed accountable.
We have gotten so many calls this election season. They have nothing to do with editorials, but for instance, after a debate, they'll be like, well, how come you're running all these articles about Trump and you're not running any articles about Clinton or vice versa? We get them from both sides. And we will actually have to go through and we count, and we have the exact number of articles. But people will swear up and down that we have run far more articles about one candidate than we have about the other, even though they're neck and neck. So there is just a general distrust out there that has nothing to do with an editorial opinion. It's a cynicism that we've talked about. So,
Howard, when it comes to that wall between editorial and news, you've got Betty saying endorsements are great, but she thinks the Times is biased, and I suspect if she were to call back and explain a little bit more, she would say she feels that the Times is biased in its news coverage. I mean, an editorial is by definition a statement of a choice, but the news coverage is not supposed to be that way, I guess, to the best of our ability. What does that say to you about the way people are perceiving journalism and news departments?
Well, first of all, to me, the New York Times, I'm a subscriber. It's one of the best news organizations in the world. But I read it as a kind of a, I'm libertarian, kind of right-leaning, and I think there is some bias that creeps in. And I've worked in a lot of newsrooms over the years, and I know a lot of journalists like to not deny this, but most newsrooms lean left. And they don't even realize it. And, that comes down to confirmation bias. But being somebody who looks at it from a rightward perspective, I'm outside of that confirmation bias bubble. And I see all these people that think that their tightly held left-leaning views are arrived at objectively and that they're mainstream and they're normal. And so, therefore, they're not biased. And I've just seen that throughout my entire career. And the New York Times, the kind of bias that happens isn't necessarily, okay, we're going to do a story that goes out and we're just going to really hammer Donald Trump because we hate Donald Trump. No, that doesn't happen. what happens is it's just subtle little word choices or a little bit of different take on things that it really takes a perceptive reader to kind of pick up on. I don't think the New York Times newsroom has an agenda pro-Hillary, anti-Trump. Most newsrooms have a bias towards let's get a great story, regardless of whether that helps or hurts the person I like or don't like. And a lot of readers really don't understand that. That's where, you know, kind of like the prejudice and of the newsroom is. And, you know, and the most pro-Hillary news reporter that you'd ever meet would love to write the story that totally pins Benghazi on her or something. You know what I mean? They'd love to have that scoop, regardless of how they feel about her as a presidential candidate.
Julia, you want to
respond?
Yeah,
I would just say Betty strikes me as someone who doesn't need media literacy, that she was able to distinguish between the editorial page and the news. She can still see bias within the news coverage. And you know, I think that's another big conversation that I have read about, just the changing nature of journalism itself and reporters coming to terms with their own biases. And how that might affect their reporting. That's a whole other show for you.
But you know, I actually think this is a good time
for that.
but this is a good time to kind of follow that for one moment here, because I do think that ties into if the news consuming public is cynical about endorsements because they don't trust quote unquote objectivity in the news organization, that's a problem for the news organization. You don't want, Julie, you don't want your news reporters to be viewed as a tool of the editorial department, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And so I think of two things that stand out to me. First of all, Jay Rosen is a New York University professor and a media critic and someone everybody should follow on Twitter. Very interesting guy. He doesn't believe in objective journalism. He thinks that term is dead and never really existed because human beings have bias. And when people claim they're objective, to Howard Owen's point, they think, well, I'm the one who's objective. So the way I'm presenting this comes because I don't have a bias. As opposed to saying, I'm going to be self-aware of my bias and try to make sure I counter that in my reporting with at least honoring other voices and trying to write as fairly recognizing my own biases.
You said that so much better than I did.
Okay.
So well done. And the accent was nice, too.
So Jay thinks, you know, sort of objective reporting is not a real thing. Second of all, I think of Ezra Klein, formerly of the Washington Post and the founder of Vox.com, and a left-leaning guy, and a data guy, and who's written a lot about healthcare, but also seeks to write sort of explainer stories on Vox.com on all manners of news, and it's left-leaning. And he recently wrote about bias. And what he wrote, and I'm going to try to sum him up without reading it in front of me, and I want to see what you guys think about this. He said, yes, the media leans left, mostly in big cities, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, bigger networks, because those journalists are based in cities, and more than anything, journalists are not liberal, they are cosmopolitan. They live in more pluralistic places, they see more diversity, they are more used to it, they are not as put off by it, and they find it in their own DNA to want to protect it. And so does that end up aligning with more political left-leaning causes? Yes, but he defines it as more cosmopolitan, whereas local news tends to be sometimes in big cities, sometimes in more rural areas, sometimes more conservative. But he views it as sort of a cosmopolitanism in the mainstream media that does lean left because of that exposure to diversity. And that was sort of his take. And I said, you know, let's recognize it for what it is. It is a bias, and that's where he thinks it comes from. What do you think, Julie?
I think there's some validity to that. I haven't really studied it or discussed it a lot with anyone. But I think, you know, if you think back to, let's take doctors, for instance, it used to be you go to your doctor, what your doctor told you to do, you would do with you without question. That was what your doctor said. Now we live in an era where you go to your doctor, you ask a lot of questions, you take charge of the room, then you go out and you go ask another doctor and you go online and then you call your first doctor back and you check with your insurance. I mean, there, everything we do, now several generations have grown up with questioning institutions. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. As you find with second opinions, you often get better health care. So I think it's a fair question to ask. Mm-hmm. Are reporters biased, whether they know it or not? They are human beings. And is it better to acknowledge that face it and address it so that, they're continually alert to it when they're doing their work, or to pretend it's not there.
Howard Owens is in Batavia. That's not necessarily New York City or Washington or L.A., as Ezra Klein was saying. Do you buy his idea on cosmopolitanism in the mainstream media?
Well, I think I don't know. I don't want to say that being worldly aware and having greater exposure to different ideas and different people and knowing people of different backgrounds necessarily leads to a liberal viewpoint. I don't feel that it has for me, but I think having a broader mind makes me smarter and examine things and be a little less categorical in my thinking. And that sometimes, because you're willing to accept other point of views, sometimes gets you, I've found this in my own life, sometimes gets you labeled as liberal, even though you're not necessarily so. One of the things I've found in my own reporting, I like to think, and maybe I'm deluding myself, but the more I kind of acknowledge my biases or my viewpoints, and then work hard to ensure that the viewpoints that I may disagree with are still included in my coverage, has lent itself to people complimenting my coverage on being unbiased.
Okay. Sean Carroll, is the media lean left, and is it a cosmopolitanism in big cities?
Fear of me falling into one of the two quotes you rattled off. I think that you can, certainly you can recognize various leanings within a news team, and obviously we're part of a large news team. Julie Phillips is familiar with that. Slightly different on Howard's situation. I think you can recognize that of peers and colleagues and be aware of it and self-aware. But when it comes to self-awareness, I think you can find a path to objectivity if you're self-aware for what works. For what works with me, and I'm not going to make this about me, but I've literally committed to be an objective journalist. I can't vote. I choose not to register. I choose not to vote. I choose not to go down any path for me because I know how I operate. I never want to have a microphone in front of somebody that says, man, I wish I voted for the other person, or man, I'm proud of this. I don't ever want that feeling. And that's me being self-aware about who I am. I have a saying, many have heard it, you can't like everybody equally, but you can hate them all equally. So that's how I treat my approach to covering and analyzing politics, and I'll
go after
everybody.
You are a citizen.
You're a hater.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right.
But
if you're a politician,
you're a citizen.
I hate you.
In the privacy of a voting booth, you're a citizen.
This is how I work, and I'm not saying that
sure.
This is how any citizen needs to, and I'm sure I'll be taken to task by plenty of listeners or readers and all that. I don't mind that, and I can stand here and defend that task because I'm being self-aware about how I tick and how I talk, and I don't ever want to be in that situation.
All right, before I get to the phone calls on that, Julie, how do you feel about it? Do you vote?
I do vote. I do not register with a party. I never have. But I do vote.
Howard,
I take it pretty seriously.
Howard, do you vote?
I do vote. I'm pretty open on social media about my political views. However, I'm not a member of a political party and haven't been for about 30 years and pretty much detest both major parties.
The duopoly is strong in this country. Howard, how do you feel about Sean saying for him it's something that he thinks he should not do? Voting.
Who are you asking me?
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
Okay. Rational economists would argue that, one individual voting or your decision not to vote is really kind of a rational decision, considering the amount of impact that you'd have. I know others might argue that, Sean's a very articulate, well-informed, caring person, and the society is diminished by his lack of participation. But in the sheer numbers that we're talking about, I think there's maybe he may be right. There may be a larger societal need for him not to participate at that level, given his role at a very important news station in town.
All right, let me get to your phone calls and more of your emails before the end of the hour. Bill in Brighton, go ahead, Bill.
I just wanted to point out with your comments about the New York Times, the wonderful thing about that paper, they try to bring things in balance. If you go to their op-ed section, mm-hmm. you will find columns by Russ Daugherty, who is definitely a right-wing Republican, and a more philosophic conservative Republican of David Brooks. And I just thought I would point that out, that the Times, unlike some other papers, does try to provide balance.
They also have, in their opinion section, they'll bring up an issue, and they'll have four different people talking about their opinion about that to kind of, because most issues are not to one
left
or the
right,
other.
One way or another.
And they bring in three or four people.
Bill, thanks for that. And on the subject of bias, here's a pretty wise comment from George on Twitter. He says, bias occurs in story selection to a greater degree than story composition. I think that's a fair point.
Yeah. Interesting.
And an interesting perspective there. Richard writes to us on the following. He says, in history, weren't newspapers in years gone by just chattels of the party? The parties, the endorsements were subject to the owner's political leanings. Things are somewhat different today. But some of that history remains. Julie Phillip?
Yeah, you know, I have not studied this extensively, so I might be speaking out of school here a little bit. But it is my understanding that the original newspaper were they were political instruments.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Prior to the printing press, the newspapers were typically owned by political parties or other groups with agendas. Some of that lingered, after the rise of, the steam press and greater ability to print papers more cheaply. And you'd have cities, Little Emporia, Kansas, when William Allen White moved there, he bought the Republican paper in town because there was a Democratic paper and there were papers affiliated with other groups. And the early part of newspaper history, that was really a large part of how they made money.
That was when they didn't trust us, right, Howard?
Was aligning with the political power in town.
Mike and Richard via email have very different takes on endorsements. Mike writes, I agree that endorsements color the integrity of a news organization. The organization's relationship with its audience should be paramount. Nothing should stand in the way of that relationship. But Richard writes, over the past 30 years, we as a public, have been fed a menu of how the government is the problem and the media is even worse. What other expectations should we as the public expect? We need to have recommendations. We don't have to agree with them. But no matter what the politicos say, I believe a free press is needed. So he's saying, endorse away. You don't have to agree with that. But, you know, there's something valuable about that. I see the phone ringing again. Julie Phillip, do you think in the last 30 years, I think Howard mentioned since Watergate, really, that things have really kind of turned on the public perception. What's one thing that you think will start to change the polls, the public perception? How are we going to get to it in 5 or 10 years, have the public say that they do have a pretty strong trust in American journalism again?
I know what the polls say, but I would argue that people don't distrust all journalists. If somebody said, do you distrust newspapers? I'd have to say, yeah, because of the all of the newspapers clumped together, I do not trust. But I think people are able to recognize the Gary Craigs, the Steve Orrs, the Megan McDermotts, the people that really know their stuff. And I think they do trust maybe more than a poll would show. I think putting all those numbers out there doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah, I think cynicism's in vogue, and that's not a good thing either. Sean?
There's one endorsement I stand by that should be happening, and that's judicial endorsements.
We didn't get that's very
interesting. Topic for another day, but it is time to shed a light in there because there that is literally a system that hits our streets from safety to crime, and there is not proper vetting because of ethical guidelines.
Well, the
and
entire way that we select judges is sort of interesting to me too.
But that's a topic for another day, and that deserves endorsement because it takes some research to figure out if this judge or that judge is qualified, fair, and judicious.
Okay, Howard.
I was just going to, I think Sean raises a great point. Once somebody becomes a judge, it's pretty much, an appointment for life until they decide to retire or whatnot. And I sit in county court all the time, and nothing against any of our judges, but, you talk about bias. We all have biases, and are the judges applying the law and making judgments in a way that best suits societal needs? They have a huge impact on their local communities, especially in a small town like this. They determine who gets into drug treatment and who doesn't. I mean, and so knowing more about these men and women that sit on the bench, I think, would be very helpful to voters, and I think those races should be more contested.
And let's just be blunt about it. Sean Carroll, among others, but I think Sean has led the way to open New York courts to public access, and a lot of judges don't want to open the courts to access. They don't want reporters communicating with the public during trials. They have limited it. I think it has lacked transparency and accountability, and I think it makes it hard for the public to understand whom they're voting for in judicial races. So maybe, Julie Philip, more endorsements for judges.
I'll take
you got
that
nothing
back
to do,
the board.
But take it back to the board. That's an interesting.
I'll help.
I think that's the one
break
thing.
Tradition.
Wow.
Like the USA
you're
Today.
To break tradition. Look at that, Sean Carroll. See, look at that. We had a kumbaya moment before the end of the hour.
So nice.
I want to thank all of my guests on this subject. It's an interesting way to end the week because there has been a lot of focus on the value or not of endorsements, and I think this discussion at the very least indicates a thoughtful approach in local media no matter where they stand. Howard Owens, you can read his work for the Batavian and the Wyoming County Free Press. And Howard, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sean Carroll, 13 WHAM News, back to work for you, sir.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Thank you very much. And Julie Philip from the Democrat and Chronicle, senior engagement editor. Nice talking to you as always, Julie.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Evan.
John Andrus is the engineer of this broadcast. Thank you, John. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. If you missed any of this week's broadcast, we always create a brand new Weekend Connections podcast that's kind of our 20 minutes, perfect for your treadmill or drive for the weekend, and it'll post this afternoon, little chunks of shows you might have missed. So Megan and I are at work on that, and then we'll talk with you on Monday.